Hello, everybody. This is Clint Locklear with Trapping Radio. It is October. It's Friday early morning. My wife has got some time off, so we're going to go enjoy some time this afternoon and with her family this evening. So I'm looking forward to that. So I'm doing this kind of early. So hopefully I'm awake enough to do this. I think I will be here in a minute. I think we got a pretty interesting show tonight. If I start salivating too much, and it sounds kind of like I maybe been drinking, it's not. I've got a bunch of pork ribs that have been eaten. We keep the ribs, and we got our chicken bones from some rotisserie chickens and some chicken feet that I'm just starting to smell that are roasting in the oven for the weekly batch of bone broth in there. So hopefully that doesn't mess with me too much, because it's starting to smell a lot like Thanksgiving in here, if you know what I mean. So excuse me if that happens this way. I do want to thank all the sponsors for Trapping Radio. You've got Oki Cable and Trap and Jeff Dunlap Lures and F&T, Weebly Knives and Wildlife Control Supplies. Those guys are some really, really dependable people in the fur industry that'll take care of you. And I really appreciate them sponsoring this so we can do this every week. So I just want to give a shout out to the sponsors on that. Before we get into the trapping part, which I think you're going to find pretty interesting tonight, I want to have a little palaver with you and opine for a second on a couple of different subjects that I think is important, and one or two I think we should talk about from the last rant, just because I forgot to put them in there. If you hadn't heard it, it might be one you might find interesting. So, but some of the stuff I left out, I want to talk about that real quick. Now, before we get started, guys, our world is changing so fast. It really is. Technology and the way things are done is changing faster than we even know it. Because I'm not a tech guy. But this, the way things are going, when I talk about you needing to come up with ways to be able to have revenue streams for yourself, really, really think about that. Just do yourself a favor and think about that. Now, another thing about your own personal economy that you need to think about, and I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not giving any type of advice here, but I just want you to think a little bit. Have you ever wondered what it must look like inside of a casino? Because I don't really spend time in a casino. If you have, I'm sure you know exactly what this probably looks like. But like, say the roulette table. And someone's winning at the roulette table, and the more they win, the bigger their bets get, the more excited they get, and the more they have this belief, which is shown through psychology, that when you have all this winning going on, you just assume it's going to continue on forever. Can you imagine probably what that looks like? And then if you think about it, maybe I should have used a different game because I don't know that much about roulette. But say the numbers or the colors, I think that's the one that you spin around with the little balls. Say your numbers are wrong or your letters are wrong or whatever would make you lose that game. And someone has been piling all this money inside of that, getting all excited. And you can see the greed dripping out of the pores of their skin as they know they're going to be a winner one more time. And then, bam. Lady Luck turns her back on him. Now, total devastation. I can't believe this happened to me. I thought for sure, no one said, all this type stuff's going to be going on, but it's going to be pretty sad. So if you can visualize that, someone winning and then all of a sudden not winning when they thought they were going to win. I mean, I've seen it in movies. I'm sure it's pretty close to the truth, but just have that mental picture in your mind. A couple of days ago, the stock market broke a record at a number that no one thought they would probably see in their lifetime. Now, when it broke the record, that got my attention. So what I've done, as I've been driving back and forth the post office and going out and doing stuff, I have Fox Business News on my talk radio because just out of curiosity, what are they saying? Now, for 3 days, I've listened to this maybe about three and a half hours of having to go to the post office and running back and forth to get this or that, or going out to the farm. I listened to it today while I was planting some English walnuts. And I'm listening to it, and I'm not listening to it from the point of view of should I invest or shouldn't I invest. What's the angle that these people that's hooked directly to the stock market and people being feverish about the stock market, what are they saying? Interestingly enough, there's been a few people that's come on and were basically saying it's about to correct. Now, they give some pretty legitimate reasons, you know, and I don't sit there and study the stock market by any stretch of the imagination. I personally invest in myself, in my business, or other revenue streams. I think it's way better percentages. So I don't have a hunt in this game whatsoever. If the stock market completely goes away tomorrow, as far as my income goes, I just want to be open with everybody. It's not going to make one penny difference in any of my accounts. So it's not like I'm trying to get people to do one thing or another. But what I did not hear over the last 3 days is no one talked once about the infusion of the over $1 trillion into the banking system that went straight to the stock market. No one brought that up. It's all about how good businesses are doing, you know, ignoring all that extra free money, all this type stuff. And it's just going to grow when we get the tax plan. It's going to explode, you know. And if I want you to think about kind of what you're hearing, because if you've turned on any news, you've heard stuff like this. Do you think that's pretty close to the guy at the roulette table that's won? He's won a few more times. Now he's winning. He's getting excited. And it's kind of sounds a lot like these guys on the stockbroker, you know, pimps are going buy, buy, buy. It's just going to go up. It's just going to go up. It's just going to go up. Do you think it probably looks about the same? Now, some of the guys that are starting to say there's about to be a correction, you know, there's no reason for the stock market to be up this much. It's not like businesses are actually performing that much better. They just have a lot of money because they got over $1 trillion of free money and it's sitting there. So it gives the bank statements looking a little big. We've kind of talked about this before. And I guarantee you when somebody looks at a 401k at record numbers right now, you probably start getting that gambling thing going on in your head. It's human nature. I'm not saying that it's wrong to think this way. I just want you to think. But when the person at the roulette table is winning and winning and winning, he never thinks he's going to lose. Now, psychologically, this is proven the way humans think. If you're gambling and you're winning and winning and winning, you think you're on a streak. Now, when you statistically look at the numbers, that's completely irrelevant about what's going to happen. So winning and losing and loss and streaks when it comes to numbers, and that's what games like that are statistics and math, we put something on it that's not there. Gamblers do it every day, and they get in big trouble. I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of guys that listen to this interview that if they don't think about what's going on and they let this greed part get a hold of them, because I want everybody out there to make 10 times more money than I do. That would be awesome to me. I wish I was the poorest person ever in trapping. So it's not that I don't want you to make money. But maybe start thinking, if everybody's in this fevered pitch, think about back in 2007 when everything crashed and everybody lost 50% of what they had in the stock market and everybody thought it was the end of the world. Right up to that point, it sounded exactly the same as it does today. Now, could it continue just to go higher and do better? I don't know. It probably could. But just think about it. But you need to do it from an objective view and reasoning that's away from the gambling table when you take a look at something like this. That's all I want. It's been on my mind a little bit, and I just wanted, if you're into 401ks and you're getting hyper growth rates right now and you're looking at that and you're seeing it build and this, that, and the other, keep in mind if it corrects, if you own it on the way up, you also own it on the way down. And if it's in 401ks and stuff like that, you're pretty much screwed because that's not really in a situation to allow you to jump out without a bunch of penalties and fees and stuff like that. So basically, just think about what's going on with that. And if it does correct like 2008, what about your revenue streams? Just keep it in mind, guys. That's all I'm saying. Now, one thing I do want to bring up before we get into the trapping is I did a rant on... I had a question from Jesse about why do conservatives believe in GMOs and why do people pick sides in this, that, and the other. And it was probably the longest rant I've done the whole time. And one of the examples that I really wanted to give in the book, which part of this is going to be in the show today in a different manner of one of these examples. So I want to give both of these. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's people putting up walls and stuff like that and how people react when they hear something that goes against their belief or their team. If you're conservative, you know, you're against the hippies. If you're a hippie, you're against the conservative. GMO, you know, why do people still believe that? Different things like that. Now, one example, you know, he was asking, how do you get someone to understand? Now, one thing is you can personalize it. And I want to give this example because I want people to kind of understand why people like me get so upset with people like Monsanto. And I am also very frustrated when I talk to anybody that's not, you know, on the environmentalism side where they want to stand up and, you know, well, all organic stuff is stupid and overpriced and, you know, that Roundup ain't bad for you. You know, I wash my kids in it every night and they only got four heads. There ain't nothing wrong with them. I mean, that's kind of the way it feels when this is brought up because of this shield wall we put up, which is a Viking fighting technique, which we covered in there. But when you're talking to somebody, personalize it, because both of these examples we're going to bring back into the show here in a minute inside of trapping. If you personalize something where someone can visually put themselves in the shoes on what's going on, all of a sudden now it's a little bit different than if it's just abstractly given out. So if you're bringing up Monsanto to a conservative person and they're very pro Monsanto, but they're also very conservative, there's going to be some conflict if you can actually just have a conversation with somebody like that where they're not going to be throwing up the shields and trying to stab you while they curse at you. You know, because there is some very, once the facts are known a little bit, it's hard for someone to stand behind Monsanto. So I'm going to use an example here, and I'm going to tell you what happens with Monsanto. We're going to say that I know where you live, your house, the listener right now, I know where you live, and you have a wife or a girlfriend, and I show up at your house and I kick the front door in, so I trespass on your property. And then with no consent from your wife or girlfriend, I commence to have sexual relations against her will. We call that rape. And she's going to have a child because, let's say that maybe I'm fertile and it's her right time and she gets pregnant. This is happening at your house where I trespass on your property. And then I go against the will of the landowner or the body owner, and rape this person, get them impregnated. And then when it's all said and done, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to go, now, since you have my child in you, you have to pay me for the right to carry my child, which was forced upon you. Now, we could make that a lot more dramatic, but I just want to keep this short. I want you to think about that. Someone comes in your house, they rape your wife or your girlfriend, and then they get them pregnant after they trespassed on your property and they committed this crime that you didn't ask for and you didn't consent to, and now you owe them money because their sperm was in your girlfriend or wife and she got pregnant. That's kind of crude, I know, but just think about that a minute. Now, when it comes to learning how to talk to somebody where you can talk with them where it's personal to them, if you put a storyline like that with a conservative, they're not going to exactly like the story. Because you notice, I never said anything in that story about Monsanto. But if a conservative believes in property rights, they're going to have a big, they're going to have a hard time with Monsanto, because this is what happens today in the real world. And if you don't believe me, go talk to a farmer and they'll tell you exactly what I'm getting ready to say. Let's say on my farm, I'm growing my Silver Queen sweet corn for the market or for me and Cindy. The neighbor plants GMO corn. Now, if for some reason Monsanto wanted to come over to my farm and the wind blew the day that the pollen came off the farm and it hit my corn and it was at the right stage, and their corn came across my property line, the pollen did, without my consent, was something I didn't want to happen, and their GMO corn has sexual relations with my corn and gets my corn pregnant, so when the corn ears grow, it's got the genetics of the Silver Queen and the GMO in it. That's no different than me breaking in your door and raping your wife or your daughter. All I did was kind of change the parameters, but it's the same. Monsanto's corn trespassed, has sexual relations with, gets pregnant, and now Monsanto's takes the farmer to court and you have to pay them because their corn came across your property and mixed with your corn, and now because it has a patented life form in it, you have to pay Monsanto's because your corn is pregnant with their pollen. How can someone that believes in property rights think that's a good thing? Now see, most people, when they think about GMO saving the world and the rice that's supposed to make all the kids see because it gives them vitamin A and all that stuff, one, they never look at the studies to see that it doesn't really happen that way. The countries can't afford the rice to grow it like they needed to grow it with the GMOs anyway, but they hear stories like that, but they don't know the real story of what it's like dealing with Monsanto. If you talk to any farmer that I've ever talked to, if you want to get them upset, talk about Monsanto. It's amazing to me that Monsanto's in business, but I mean, they must have tremendous amount of power, and they give it a lot of lobbying power, and there's a lot of subsidies that go to stuff like that, which again, a conservative wouldn't really want to do about anything like that. So if you put it personally like that, with a GMO and a conservative, maybe you can start getting them to think a little bit different. Now, I just also heard something on the Fox Business News, where one of the founders of Facebook has come out and said on purposely, when they set up Facebook, when the designers of Instagram set theirs up, and there was one more of the social sites, Facebook, Instagram, anyway, there's the three main ones. They have psychologists that come in and figure out how to get dopamines to fire by the way they set up their web pages. And basically what they've come to is every time you hit like or someone hits like on your post, you get a dopamine release in your brain, because basically of social confirmation, and someone's paying attention to me and someone likes what I'm doing. Everybody does this, where you actually have a chemical release in your brain, and Facebook admits this. Now, what this guy was saying is he's starting to feel guilty because he knows they're physically changing the brains of children with these type of setups. Now, he's already made his billions off of Facebook. So, I mean, you know, he didn't feel that guilty at the beginning, but he's starting to see how this is really affecting a lot of children. And you know, with the quote conservatives, they're on Fox Business News, they made fun of him. Now, why did they make fun of him? They made fun of him because they have stock in Facebook. See, there's no difference in what's going on there, whether it's in Monsanto. But I have a feeling with the lawsuit that's going on with Monsanto's now in California, they pulled a bunch of emails. They found out that Monsanto's has been lying about Roundup, because they've been saying the active ingredient is glyphosate, and it's really not. What they've been putting in there, which no one really knows exactly what it is, because they say it's inert like water or soap, is actually 200 times more stronger and screws with life forces more than glyphosate does. So eventually that's going to get straightened out. And I have a feeling somewhere down the road, it's going to become clear that Roundup is maybe one molecule off of Agent Orange. And Monsanto's will probably go away at that point, no matter how much money they have. Once the public realizes that to that degree, that all the veterans with all the problems with Agent Orange, now we've been spraying it on the country since the 70s, and it's about the same thing. I don't have proof of that. I'm just a dumb redneck from Dunlap, Tennessee that has a feeling that's what's eventually going to come out from that. But putting things personal and understanding that people are gonna fight for their side no matter what, even when they have someone that tells them that designed something that, yeah, we're screwing up your kids, they don't care, and it's because of social confirmation. Now, the social confirmation is getting ready to come up again. Okay, those are just a couple things I wanted to talk with a little bit before we get into the actual part of the trapping show. So let's go ahead and do this. Now, I wanted to talk about talking to landowners. And I've said I'm going to do this, and I'm not sure I'm going to do all this in one show. I'm probably going to spread it out so we can actually get into some catching animals type stuff. But this is very, very important. What you have to understand as a trapper, and most trappers, because I've talked to them about this, you know, just hearing what they say and it's stuff it shows and emails and things like that, they don't quite understand what happens when you're talking to a landowner about trapping on the property. Now, depending on what it is or how you look at the world, you may say, well, this is not the way that I want to be. When you're asking to trap on a customer's property, you notice I say customer, that's what it is. You're selling at that point. No one likes to be sold to. We all kind of know when we're being sold to. And if you're bad at selling and you try to sell to somebody, it's even worse. I mean, it really is. So think about this when you're going to be talking to a landowner. Now, what I would rather you look at when you're talking to a landowner is think about persuasion. Because that's really what selling is. It doesn't have the stigma of, say, selling in your mind. But you need to understand that you're kind of like a business owner, because you are at that point. And he's like a customer, because he is. So instead of thinking about selling, because a lot of people have a misunderstanding about what selling is, let's put this in terms of being persuasive. And to be persuasive to a customer, the only thing that's really going to get what you want is if the customer understands that you're going to help them in some way or another. But that's not normally what happens. And this is what I mean by this. You see some property you want to trap, you go knock on the door. Do you care if I trap your property? Now, one, that's not very persuasive. And two, what are you doing to help that customer out? Nothing. Now, if you're in the ADC business and you're trying to talk to somebody that's got land and they're trying to raise deer, and you're just like, you know, I can trap your property. You know, I noticed you're raising these deer, so I can trap your property for $500 a week. Where is the helpfulness to the customer? What need is that feeling filling for the customer? None. That's when it gets really awkward. Now, what we're going to talk about, keep in mind, practice makes perfect. A skill is only a skill when somebody does it over and over and over and over again. A skill is also only a skill when someone fails at it a lot. Or it's not really a skill. So to be a master at anything, you've got to do something a lot. So learning the art of persuasion, when you're figuring out how to help a landowner, whether it be for fur or for ADC work, that's the way you need to go about it, which is going to bring in strategy, because it's going to be up to you to figure that out. Now, when you're persuading somebody, what you're trying to do is move their mind in the direction that you want it to be moved in. can I trap your property? It doesn't move their mind anywhere. It doesn't. Nor is there a general, generic way of doing this, because you're going to meet people that's going to have different needs that you can help them with. So just having, you know, like a little elevator speech that you can just plop out there doesn't work very well. And one, it always comes across contrived, which then again brings you back to no one likes to be sold to, and they know what elevator speeches are because we hear them all the time. So I wouldn't really go about it that way. But you're trying to move their mind in a certain direction. Now, what could that be? It could be that they got beaver problems on timber loss, flooded property, broken tractors and beaver houses, different things like that. They may not be thinking of right now. So you're looking out there and they've got these fields and there's a ditch running down through there and you see the beaver dam, and it hadn't really caused any problem yet to that landowner, but you want to trap it because you want the beaver. It's up to you, not the landowner, but it's up to you to move their mind in the direction of what can happen. The dead trees, the loss of the timber that they could sell, you know, the flooded crops. You know, you could talk about, if you've ever, I mean, I've seen this a few times myself where a tractor drives off in an old beaver den and breaks the whole front end out of a $500,000 tractor. The farmer wants the beaver gone at that point. But it's your job to move their brain in the direction that you want it to be in. If you're doing ADC and it's for deer, well, what do they want? What is important to the customer? Well, they're going to want more fawns to survive, and they're going to want bigger deer. They're going to want easier deer to hunt. They're going to want higher quality deer. What is it they want? They don't want to spend as much a deer feed because of the raccoons. That could be what it is. You know, it could be they're getting ready to dump out a bunch of chickens and ducks, and they got fox running around. Well, they're going to be, you know, having all kind of issues at that point. So if you move them in the direction of where you want them to go, which is seeing why you're valuable. If they have pets outside, bring up the pets. Make sure that you have pictures on your cell phone where the coyotes are running around with the dogs and the cats in their mouth crossing the street on video and stuff like that. And, you know, just kind of like, you know, nonchalantly go, man, I just saw this online. Have you seen something like this? And pull that up. And now you see that there's, you know, his wife's holding Fluffy on the front porch and he's looking down and Fluffy is in the mouth kicking and screaming in a coyote as it runs off in the dark, you know, on someone's trail cam somewhere. You're going to move their mind in the direction that you want to move them in. Now, the way that you do this is you need to gently figure out a way to give them perspective on the perspective that you want them to see. This is where the persuasion is at. I could probably do a whole show on why Trump is so genius with this. He's absolutely genius with this one thing, and it's persuasion. But not exactly in the persuasion that people think about, but persuasion in the future. He's absolutely ingenious when it comes to this. He gently, even though he's pretty rough and tough and he seems to, like, you know, fall around a lot, and, you know, he doesn't have the Obama way of articulation and stuff like that. But what he does is he uses phrases way ahead of time to get people thinking the way that he wants them to think. A great example of this is when he started running for president, "I am not an angel." See, that seems like a very insignificant thing, but it was genius. So when they pull out stuff of him where, you know, he's having his locker room talk, talking about grabbing a girl, "Hey, I said I wasn't an angel." Now, if you were somewhat going to be a Trump supporter, man said he wasn't an angel. We're not looking for an angel to be a politician. he knew stuff was going to come up, and he set that perspective up months ahead of time. Absolutely genius. Now, when it comes to trapping, if you're going to set this new perspective, a lot of times the landowner guys just don't have a clue what having an excess of certain animals means. They don't. And you have to be very careful when you're talking to them so you don't come across as you're being aggressive, or you're trying to show them that you're smarter than they are, or you're just trying to scare them for scaring them sake or whatever. But you can move them in a general area. And the best way that I found to do this is kind of talk in terms of, this is what I've seen. When you see this, just keep me in mind, because I can come over and help you out, because it's probably going to be this way. And it could be you're going to start finding your phone numbers are dropping. And if that's the case, you're having coyote problems, and I can you know, give you guidance on where to look at these studies. We're showing, you know, certain percentage of fawns are getting eaten by coyotes in different parts of the country, and that's kind of a common number. So when you, if that happens here, if the coyote population gets to a certain point, you're going to start seeing that. Give me a call. Now, that landowner may not even be thinking of his fawn numbers, because he may have always heard, ah, coyotes don't have any effect on your numbers. His buddies all say that. He don't believe it. But see, what you've done is you've put the perspective that you wanted to into his future mind that he can never get rid of. All of a sudden, one day, he sees a doe with two fawns. And a week later, he no longer sees the doe, but only one fawn. You've already set up his perspective of what's going on, and he's going to want a solution, which is you. If once the beaver dam gets above this point out here, it's going to flood your fields, and this could happen, because, you know, I've seen this happen before. So if it gets to that point, let me give you a card and you can call me, and we can figure something out then. It, you know, and I'll schedule you when I can. Now, he may not think anything about that, but all of a sudden he looks out there in a couple of weeks and the beaver dam is, 6 inches higher than it was last week. Oh, my goodness. If they do that again, it's going to flood out in the water. In his mind, he's going to be thinking, my farm is about to get flooded. Why? Because, just like Trump, I'm letting everybody know that I'm not an angel. So you have to be able to gently give them a perspective of why it's important that you trap. And that's not an easy skill set to do. I'm not even going to pretend that it is. And the first few times you do it, you're probably really, really going to screw the pooch. So I would say the first few times that you do this, guys, with someone that's a landowner, practice on some people you really don't care if you get their land or not, because it's a learning process. You're going to have to show confidence that you can actually help them. But it's going to be up to you to put a better perspective or a better context into their head about what's going on. If they want bigger deer, you can use this as an example, because it's the absolute truth. You know, I've got buddies that trap, unless you go to Texas, I've got buddies that trap in Texas, and they kept seeing this thing they couldn't believe, and the biologist told him it was because of stress. When they breed those deer down there, have you seen the way they're breeding those deer today? I mean, they're like 290 points. And they go, yeah, man, I saw them on the, you know, in the magazine, this, that, and the other. You know, but when they turn those deer loose, if they don't shoot that deer with a hunter in the first 3 or 4 months, that 180-point deer, or say 250-point deer, will be 190-inch deer the next year. And the biologist told me it's because they're always running around from predators. You know, so if your population gets up like it's getting close to doing, and you start seeing your antler size isn't what it should be, hey, man, give me a call. We can figure, we'll work something out. Now, see, I didn't tell him that I could give him bigger deer. I just changed his perspective of his landscape, of his mental way he's going to be looking at things from that point on. Now, you know, one of the things, like with the GMOs, just for a different context here, GMOs are designed to work off chemical fertilizers. Whatever your idea of if they're good or bad or whatever, take that completely off the shelf. But I know that Jesse that wrote this question, that's part of what that question was like, is how do you get someone to do this? If you change their perspective the way that you want them to, they're going to see you as a solution, or they're going to see the problem that you don't, that they probably didn't see before, I guess is a better way to put it. So with GMOs, those chemicals are salt-based. They force-feed the plants. That's what the GMOs are designed to do. When you use the salt on the land, it kills the soil life, but it also burns up the carbon that's in the soil. When you have less organic matter in the soil, the water, the ground, dries out faster with a plant that you're force feeding with salt, which has to take up more water. Can you kind of see the problem with this, guys? So it's your job to explain that if you're having to irrigate all the time, or if a little bit of a drought starts wiping your crops out, by using the GMOs, which require the chemicals and all these other inputs, you're setting yourself up for failure. Now, they may not believe you when you say that, but the next September, when it starts getting dry and stuff starting to really get stressed out in the field, they're going to be thinking about that a lot. And when they go to do the research, holy cow, the fertilizer is made out of salt. And it does require the plant to have more water. Now, you know, this other guy was saying we could do this with cover crops and get more organic matter in your soil and yada, 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 and this won't happen. You're moving them in the direction that you want to be in. So whether it's for deer or beaver or ADC work or agriculture, we're doing food plots for deer, it's all the same of how you figure out how to do it. And it's a strategy game that you're going to have to really put some thought process in for any of that to work. Now, one thing is your demeanor and your language needs to be perceived as helpful. And I've said this before, but this is the big part. People don't want to deal with people they think are just trying to get something out of them. And when you just walk up and ask for permission, the way most people do, that's the way that comes across. So it could, like I said, it could be kid safety, it could be pet safety, livestock, wildlife, whatever. Losing money because beavers are chewing your trees down, whatever it is, but you're going to have to figure out a way really quick. You're going to have to be quick about this in your head when you start talking to somebody, that your demeanor and your language is all about being helpful. But you'll notice when your demeanor is that way, it can't be self-focused on yourself. So like, you know, you're talking about you're the biggest, baddest trapper that ever walked the face of the earth, and you know more than everybody else, and you're the best trapper in the area, and this guy over here is a scumbag, and all that stuff that happens, you're breaking one of the rules, which is your demeanor and your language has to be perceived as helpful. Now, you remember me talking about Facebook. The guy saying that they know that Facebook is actually changing the brains of children because of the way that dopamine is now being enhanced in children. Now, I had a friend send me something about 3 months ago, and I thought it was very odd. And we talked about this a couple of times since that point, but it was something he came across that he was just blown away at, because he's heard me talk about how sometimes all the internet stuff can really change the way a person thinks. And what this article was saying was kind of like the new big industry that's underground that hardly anybody's talking about, is you have young girls, some underage, some overage, but you know, mostly young girls, say 16 to 25 or 30, they can start a business instantly in their house with a cell phone. And what they do is they set it up and they Skype on a monetized system, and they're calling them sex cams. So your daughter, for instance, if you have one that's 18 years old, she may be able to make more money than you by taking her clothes off and doing certain things in front of the camera that you would not want her doing. But what the article was saying, more than the money, the girls get hooked by doing the sex cam thing. And why is that? What the article was saying is it was social confirmation. When the guys were telling them how beautiful they were and how nice they looked and all this type stuff that's happening over and over again, and they're getting likes because these sites are set up with likes too, apparently, or something like a like. And then somehow you pay, which I'm assuming through PayPal or something. I don't know how it works. But there's a ding, just like on your Facebook app. So when someone likes something, you know about it. There's a ding when someone gives them money. Social confirmation. The girls get hooked, and it turns into almost like using heroin. Because, I mean, let's just be honest. The girl knows that she's just taking, you know, I'm going to say taking advantage of guys. But she knows it's a game that she's getting paid for, and the guys are taking it serious. Because guys are stupid like that. But she gets hooked on it because of all the likes, the compliments, and the dinging that's showing that someone likes it enough to actually donate her money for doing this. Now, if it's strong enough, social confirmation is strong enough where it's messing with kids' heads and it's causing girls, which I'm sure a lot of them would never do anything like this except for they feel good because people like the way they look and they're making a lot of money at it. If it works that strong, I bet if you start figuring out a way to use this with your landowners, you will get the same results. Now, what I would say doing, and if I was trying to find new customers now, which I'm not, but if I was going out to try to find new customers, I would really be playing up, and I have in the past, but not what I'm getting ready to tell you. I would make sure that I would know all of the bigwig biologists in the countries that believe in predator control. And I would drop their name with some quotes. Social confirmation. If I trap for any of their buddies or anybody in there, like in Texas, you've got a Texas Deer Breeders Association. You know, I trap for Barry, which is the president, this, that, and the other. Oh, yeah, I know Barry. He's a great guy. You trap for Barry? Social confirmation when you name drop like that. If you find out they have heroes of whatever it is, like say Ted Nugent, which believes in trapping, or Michael Waddell, say if he believed in trapping, which I don't know if he does or not, but you can use their heroes. That's just another form of social confirmation. Universities, because you know whatever university says has to be the truth. And people believe that now, and there's a big social confirmation when you use studies because of the universities. Like with the universities, you know, like the University of Georgia did this study, and they're showing the new, better way to do quality deer management on smaller properties is by predator control. And Grant Woods has been, you know, talking that he actually does predator control on his own property because he believes in it so much and is seeing these type of results. Social confirmation. Now, when I brought up the sex cams, I don't think that's a good idea to do with your landowners, but what you can do is use that same power when it comes to building a client base, whether for fur or for ADC work. Every time that you catch something on their property, if you were to put it on Facebook with their farm name and you tag them and they see that everybody's liking it, that's no different than the girl on the sex cam. Now, what I'm getting ready to say, what I'm saying on Facebook, I know a lot of you are going, yeah, I don't care about stuff like that. And I'm going to call you a liar. A well-meaning liar, maybe, but you're a liar, and I'm going to prove it to you right now. If you've ever posted anything on Facebook and you have ever once went back and seen how many likes you had on that post, you're a sucker for social confirmation. Because it is that strong of a thing when it comes to what people believe and how they react. So if you've ever went back and looked at your like on Facebook, no matter what you say openly, it's just as powerful to you as I'm saying it is to the girl on the sex cam. Now, there's certain ways we can use this, I'm sure. If you see some really nice deer on the property and the guy doesn't care, you could post his deer. You could post about how nice his food plots are. You could talk about how cool his tree stands are. You could talk about how neat his his water system is, his barns, and all kind of stuff like that. Then you can get that on Facebook, social media, Instagram. I don't know if Twitter would work with something like this. Use that social confirmation with the landowner somehow or another. And I bet if you can figure out a system for that, oh, dude, you'll have people begging you to trap just because they want the social confirmation too. So, but the biggest thing on that is it's not for you. And you may be thinking, well, this doesn't make a lot of sense. I just want to trap and stuff like that. And I should just be able to ask and everything like that. You need to understand how people really are, not the way that people say that they are. And not the way that we think that we are, but the way that we really are. People are irrational until after the fact. Let me say that one more time. People are always irrational till after the fact. They're not rational about facts or rational thought when a new idea is put in front of them. That's the reason I'm saying you have to lay the groundwork with the perception, because people are not rational. The most rational guy that you know or girl that you know is not rational, but she probably is after something happens and she has the time to see the results. But up to that point, they're really not. Just think about it. How many marriages are destroyed because one spouse cheats on the other? An hour of fun worth 20 years of alimony? See, no rational person would go there. But you can't, it's like people can't control themselves when it comes to that. How many rational, quote, rational people get in gambling trouble? How many, quote, rational people believe in politicians? That was mean, but something to think about. Because we're not rational human beings. We spend money on stuff all the time we shouldn't spend money on. We do things all the time we know we shouldn't be doing. If we're way overweight, we still eat too much. If we drink too much, we're still going to drink too much. We can go on and on. People just are not rational. But they're more rational after the fact. And especially when it comes to new ideas. And this is where I think trappers get into a pickle when they're trying to talk to somebody, is they try to force an issue. Well, I'm telling you, I'll have more deer if you let me trap. Well, if this is kind of a new concept to the guy, he's not going to be rational about any study that you bring up or anything like that. You just lay the groundwork so he starts seeing it from a rational thing after the fact. It's like you're laying booby traps of everything that could negatively go wrong on his property. He's going to start seeing as you as a solution for it. And once someone sees it for the first time, now it's all of a sudden, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And they're a true believer, but you got to get them to that point, because you can show somebody these facts and figures, but till they see some credibility on a new idea, it's not going to stick. When you start talking fawn numbers or antler size because of stress from running from predators, and what some biologists, just for your own personal knowledge, have said, part of the reason deers lose antler size is they have less minerals in their body because they don't eat as much because their head have to be up, always on alert. So that's a pretty simple thing that makes common sense if you think about it. But to someone who's never thought about that for the first time, they're going to, I don't know about that. Sounds like a sales pitch to me. So keep these things in mind when you're talking to a landowner, whether it be for fur or ADC or anything that you're doing in life. You can't be in a hurry sometimes when you're going to do stuff like this. The way I would look at getting permission is maybe if you can get half of them to say yes, you're doing good because you'll get another quarter of them over the next year or so because you've laid the groundwork that they're going to think that they really need you. So that's kind of the way that I would think about this. Now, what I want to talk about now is snaring roads and open fields. And this is kind of on my mind right now because this is kind of what I'm doing right now. Now, what I learned when I was doing predator control all over the country, the way that I could bump my numbers up the quickest was snare the roads. I'd have to work out a deal with a landowner so they know where they couldn't drive or, you know, something like that. But if you're trying to get a bunch of coyotes really quick, now you can do this with blind sets in the trails, but snares are just easier and they're more waterproof. What I like to do, guys, is I like to find two tracks where people's been driving through fields over and over again and you've got some thick cover. Down in South Carolina and Georgia and more coastal areas that I've been where it's more sandy, stuff doesn't come back as fast, and where someone drives periodically, it just destroys the root systems where the roadbed is, where the tires are at, I should say. And then you've got all this grass and stuff on the sides. It could be where someone takes a four-wheeler around a field three or four times, which you could do, which will play into the open field snaring here in a second. But if you're really wanting to get a bunch of coyotes caught quick, I've never found anything faster than snaring roads or trails. And what I mean by trails are people trails, which are usually going to be wheeled vehicles. So if I was going to go to a farm, and I would always ask the landowner, you know, is your guys going to be running the roads every day? Can we keep them off of this half of the farm for this week? And then they can go do whatever they need to do and keep them off this half the next week. Before I ever set a trap, I'm going to go to every one of these roads that has any type of vegetation. And I'm going to literally put coyote snares in the tire ruts. And I can tell you that I'm not so high and mighty that I have not cut down some cedar trees and pine trees and dropped them over roads and cut holes in there for the coyotes to have to go through where I want them to go through. And the fastest way I've learned to do this is with kill poles. And there's a couple different ways you can do this: kill poles and snare supports. Meat Trapper just showed a video where he's using a wood picket snare support, which is very similar to the way that I've snared roads where I know there's going to be traffic. And this is a way that if someone runs through there, you're not going to destroy someone's vehicle or take the paint off or pop a tire or something like that. So basically what it is, it's a wood picket that you can drill a hole towards the bottom or in the middle, and you run your number 9 wire through there. And when you beat your picket in the ground, which only needs to be 12, 14 inches, when you beat that in the ground, you have the friction of the soil that holds your number 9 wire in place. And then you can manipulate that wire to be where you want it to be with a coyote. Now, depending on how tight the road tire tracks are, depends on what the size of your loop's going to be and your state law. I need to say that because a lot of y'all live in places where you got some pretty crazy laws. And where you don't have that, it's not that big of a deal. If it's an open trail, I'm wanting a 12 to 14 inch loop, 12 inches off the ground, more leaning towards the 14 inch side. One thing about roads is there's usually a lot of change that happens on them and you don't freak stuff out. But normally when I put that kill pole in, if it stands out to me I don't want it standing out to the coyote, so I will go grab some taller grass, some brambles, blackberries, whatever it has to be, and I will literally just take a couple of handfuls, one in each hand, and shove that around the bottom of a kill pole and zip tie it, and then take the top around the top of the kill pole and zip tie it so it just looks like a thick something growing there, but you can't see the metal or anything else like that, and it's not a straight line that's so unnatural. And then you can take pieces of that in the middle and kind of fluff them out left and right, and it looks pretty natural. If it's a really open road, I may even take some long grass or a couple of pieces of bramble and kind of run those and twist those up around the snare support wire so it kind of leans over the snare and breaks up the snare and also breaks up the lock. If you're in hardwoods, you can take like maple leaves and oak leaves and stuff like that, and you can literally, if they have any age on them whatsoever, set them over that lock and give them a quick squeeze, and most of the time it'll still be on there when you show up the next day. So it looks just like a leaves kind of trapped on a piece of a limb, but you're not having this mechanical looking man-made something staring a coyote in the face. If I'm going to be using the picket snare supports, it's kind of the same way, except you got to tie off to a tree, which I promise you, if you, and some of you can't use kill poles because of the law, but when you're relying on extension cables and roads, the way people cut some of their roads, you're going to have 30 or 40 feet of extension cable to reach anything, or you're going to have to stake, and that's just too much work. But I mean, if you have to, you have to, I guess. But the kill pole, it's an integrated system that you can beat it in the ground, and then you can hook to it, and you got your snare support, and you can camouflage it. You can actually help guide the coyote with it. Once you camouflage it, you can kind of crowd him in there a little bit by bending the wire around, you know, instead of having it going straight out like an arm, you know. You can actually bend that thing around itself so it's really short to the pole, and use the pole itself with the camouflage brambles on there and push the coyote into where you want him to go. It's just a lot more open. But the downside to using a kill pole on roads, if someone comes through with a four-wheeler or a Jeep or something like that, or a motorcycle, you know, you've got a 1/2-inch to 5/8-inch rod sticking out of the ground 2.5-3 feet that's not gonna move very easily. With the wood picket, if someone comes down the road, the only friction they're going to have because of what you did is that number 9 wire that's going to be laid over. No big deal. Pick it back up, rehook your snare, and you're right back in business. I've talked about that before, but I don't see a whole lot of people actually doing it from the comments that they do. Because I can tell you right now, if I had a choice between 50 snares in roads or 100 footholds, I'll take the 50 snares every time. Because them coyotes are working them roads. And they're always looking ahead. And just the way vision works, it's deadly. I mean, it's super deadly. If you have a lot of fox and you have a lot of cover, I've caught fox that way, I've caught coyotes that way. You know, it's just a deadly thing. Now, when I say about snaring open field, guys, I'm talking about snaring open fields. But I'm not talking about snaring open yard fields. Like when I was up in Maryland with Randy, we got on some places that were sod farms, kind of like the one that's next to my farm. Well, I mean, the grass, they keep it cut to keep it full. So, I mean, the tallest it's ever going to be is 1.5 inches. That's not what I mean by open field. I'm just talking about open fields. You don't have to have trees to snare coyotes or bushes to snare coyotes if you've got open fields. All you need is weeds and brambles and stuff like that. That's all you need. And I'm getting ready to do this because I'm going to be doing it for the F&T TV show. So what I'm going to do on my farm, I on purposely left about 1 acre of just goldenrod and everything that's just growed up. and I'm going to drive through that acre of high stuff. I'm going to make a cross. You mean you could do, I mean, you know, you can talk to aliens if you want to on your shapes, but, you know, just a couple of different ways coming in and out, and I want to keep the tire tracks on the same one. So I'll probably drive over the same thing three times maybe in the Jeep. I'll have two tire tracks, and then I'm going to do the cross thing, and then I'm going to lure the coyotes to go to that. Now, there's a couple of ways to do this. You can use bait, where you have like deer scraps and stuff. If I happen to shoot a deer in the next few days, muzzleloader hunting, well, the deer is going to go in the middle of the cross because that's just going to be too convenient. But let's say I don't get a deer in the next couple of days. I have kept one of the catfish that we caught on trout lines, me and Cindy did, that's probably about 2.5-3 foot long, big old blue catfish. I've already taken the fillets out of it. I left the guts. I left everything. I just froze it. Now, what I'm going to do with that fish, you can also do with a beaver. You can do with muskrats. You could probably get away, you know, with chickens or ducks or anything, you know, like that. So if you get a chicken killed or whatever, pluck it. Because the nose of a coyote is extremely strong. So you can put the bait in the middle, kind of what most people think about. What I like doing better, and I position where I'm going to be driving through with my Jeep in one particular area. I know the coyotes, because my fence rows are very thick, they get on the road, or where I just drive, it's not really a road, but say a two-track, and they come up through there. Travis has got them three at a time on the trail cam, coming up through this road. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take that big old catfish and I'm going to let it thaw out, and I'm going to run my gaff, which if you don't have one, you can make one, or you can use your catch pole or whatever. It's just an easier way to do this. And a gaff is nothing but a pole with like a bent hook on it that you see people deep sea fishing. So when they have a fish come up, they can gaff it. That's what I mean by gaff. It's a fishing tool is what it is. And mine's probably 2.5 feet long, and it's got a hooked, really sharp point on it. So I'm going to take that catfish and thaw it out, and I'm going to throw it in that road, and I'm going to hook the gaff through probably the tail part of it, and I'm just going to walk up down that road with it two or three times, probably for about 50 yards. And then I'm going to take that catfish, and I'm going to drag it to the tire tracks in my grown-up area. You can do this with beaver. You can see this done on Coyote Chaos. Matt Jones is showing using beaver this way. Pulling coyotes off a road to go into sets by gaffing it and just pulling it. And he's making a scent trail. Nothing unnatural about that at all. Something got killed, something got drug off. Coyote being a coyote, got to figure out what that is. Maybe there's a meal there for him. So I'm going to take that catfish, and I'm going to go up and down the road two or three times, and I'm going to drag that through all of those tire marks. And I'm going to go completely across the field where we have the other two track, and I'm going to drag that up and down. So all of that good catfish odor is all over the grass and everything else. I guarantee you a canine is going to be able to smell that a month from now. So what's going to happen is this coyote is going to be coming up a two track. Because I didn't want to have where I'm planting trees where it's waist deep in all these weeds. So those are knocked down, but I left this in the middle. So I'm going to, because of dragging the fish, I'm going to move those coyotes naturally off of where they want to be, because the grass is way too short for me to be trying to snare there, to where I can snare them. And I will probably, between the fence and that, those coyotes will be dead in probably 2 days. When we were shooting the Coyote Chaos video with Matt Jones, he had a little bit different method of he would do, and this was on, we'll just say it was on somebody's ground. You need to ask permission before you do this in someone's farm, because they may get upset with you. What he did with his truck is he would just drive out into a big field And then he would come back on himself and make like this circle around. So his wasn't really an X. His was more like a straight line. You're going to say that's a popsicle stick or the sucker stick. And then he, you know, the old suckers that you used to get the bubble gum out of, the round ones, he would go out there. Then he would kind of drive in a circle around that, make a good trail around that. And then he'd come back out to the road on the two tire tracks that he made going in. And he would take a big headed carp, because he's a commercial fisherman, and he would just throw those on those tire tracks in different areas and set up all over the place on those tire tracks with snares. And lo and behold, in 2 or 3 days, you'd show up and there'd be 3 or 4 coyotes out there, a couple of them dead, a couple of them alive. And see, with a kill pole, what I like about it is the coyote most of the time will wrap up somewhat on the pole. If you open set a coyote with a snare, you're taking a chance on a chew out. But the way that you can get around that is pretty simple. Think tangle stake, just like a coon. So if a coyote's neck is as big as round as, say, between a baseball and a softball, if you bring your snare lock down to that size, stretch it out, no matter what size snare you're using, and about 4 inches in front of where that little hole, your loop is now, where you brought it down to the neck size of a coyote, beat in a half inch or a 5/8 inch rebar where it's about 18 inches out of the ground and stout. That coyote, when he gets caught in your tire track, is going to start circling on the edge of that snare, because that's as far as he can go. As he circles around that thing, he's going to hit that pole. The next circle and he does is going to be cutting the wind off of him. Now, for you guys that's got cable restraints, I don't think they're going to let you do that. But for us that have more lax laws, it makes a lot of sense. But with a kill pole, I don't have to do that. But if I was not using a kill pole, I would definitely do that. Instead of have the coyote out in the open where he can chew, I want to take that away from him. So if nothing else, he's going to fight that pole. But if you're trying to catch coyotes in a hurry, or if you're new to coyotes and you're getting frustrated with the trapping, go ahead and put you out 3 or 4 dozen snares on some roads and watch what happens. Find some places that you can drive out on the edge of a field and make your crosses, your X's, your triangles, whatever shape you want to do, and then either lure them in with a scent trail or with some bait or some call lure out in the middle of it on the top of a big goldenrod or something like that where it's in the wind. Something. And watch how easy the coyotes are to catch at that point. I actually think it's better to use the scent trail than it is to use the bait, from my own personal experience. They seem to work it quicker, because a lot of times when you have bait, like a bait pile situation, you get a lot of weird circling and sneaking and all this other stuff that happens with that. And it doesn't seem to happen as much with a trailing scent, like of a catfish or a beaver or some muskrats or something like that. It you know, it doesn't. You can take a gut pile of a deer, you know, kind of put it in a bag, let it age for a day or two, drag that, you know, in a mesh bag behind you, something like that. You could do that to get your scent trail. You can be creative as you want to be, and it's so natural. I just don't think you're going to have any issues with that whatsoever. So just keep this stuff in mind. Think about your landowners. Think about getting that perception where you want it to be. And trust me, you're going to fail at that at the beginning, which is perfectly fine. The better you get at it, the easier it's going to be to get permission, because you're using strategy instead of just asking for permission. And if you can't use snares, guys, blind set, the same type of thing I'm talking about, where I'm putting snares. And if you're going to do a bunch of those, you better have your knife ready to go.